Welcome to SportsBeat KC, the Kansas City Star's daily sports podcast. It's Thursday, July 22nd, and I'm Blair Kirkhoff. Whew, busy times on the pitch. And Sean Goodwin and Briar Napier are here to break down what we have seen over the past few days. Let's go in reverse chronological order. Just before we started recording today, the top player for KC NWSL, Amy Rodriguez, was traded to the North Carolina Courage. The team WOSO plays at home on Friday. That trade was for three players. This happened the morning after a Sporting Kansas City game that included an official's call that incensed Peter Vermees seemingly like no other in his tenure. Oh, and he wasn't even on the sideline for the game because of a health protocol. After a break, we take up the cases of the U.S. national teams. The men advanced in Gold Cup play with a victory over Canada last Sunday at Children's Mercy, a game in which Jean-Luc Bussio made his first national team start. And then in a stunner, the U.S. women's national team, coached by Kansas City and Vladko Andonovski, fell to Sweden 3-0 in the Olympic opener. We break it all down on today's show, so let's get started. Talking soccer with Sean Goodwin and Briar Napier. Good to see you guys. And I was debating this morning what to lead with. We had Sporting Kansas City playing a very interesting game on Wednesday night against San Jose. The women's national team losing its Olympic opener to Sweden in somewhat embarrassing fashion. And Vladko Andonovski, the Kansas City, and of course is the coach. And then, of course, the U.S. men's national team in the Gold Cup. Interesting game, but all of that, we'll get to all of that, but the lead for today's podcast dropped into my email about an hour before we started recording, maybe less than that, with KC NWSL trading its marquee player, Amy Rodriguez, to the team they are facing on Friday night, the North Carolina Courage. Sean, why did this happen, and what is the what's the best outcome for WOSO?
Yeah, why did this happen? We, as of when we're recording this podcast, we will be talking to Hugh Williams later today on Thursday, so we'll get more information then. But, you know, I don't take a trade in the sense that Amy Rodriguez, you know, she's a top seven goal scorer of all time in the league. She's been with Kansas City since the FC Casey days, got here in 2014, won two championships. She was league MVP in 2015. You know, you can go down the accolades, stayed with a team for Utah, came back. She's now captain, or she was captain. So it is a shocking trade in that sense, but, you know, like a lot of sports, fans can have attachments and emotions, and I'm sure coaches and players can too. That's why you see some players stay a franchise for their whole career. But, you know, she's 34 years old, and by human standards, she's not old. By soccer standards, she's certainly, you know, nearing the end of her career, lack of a better way to put it. And Kansas City's cashed in at the end of the day on three very good players, or two very good players and a very good prospect. Obviously they're struggling as they are. They are 7 points adrift of ninth place, I believe. They've got 3 points in the league, rock bottom 10th. So they need those reinforcements. And they've moved on, you know, the captain, but sometimes it's what you've got to do to succeed, right?
I was surprised because I didn't expect it, but the more I thought about it, for the reasons you explained, I think it makes sense. Your season's going nowhere in the first year for KC NWSL. Amy Rodriguez is their star attraction, but she's on the, you know, on the backside of her career. She's a veteran presence that can help a Courage team that, you know, has designs on winning the league championship this year. And Kansas City gets to, you know, add three players, one of whom is a prospect to build around and to help this year's team get a win, get in the victory column.
Yeah.
And So it makes great sense. You feel bad for the fans that wear their Amy Rodriguez jerseys out to Legends Field, and there's always that part of it. But I find this to be a pretty shrewd move by KCNWSL.
It is, it's not just. I mean, we talk about Amy's experience. You know, she's got all that experience, and especially, you know, national team level and whatnot. But on the flip side, you're bringing in two players who have won three NWSL championships each. Granted, they were the same championships with the Western New York Flash and then the NC Courage when they relocated. But two players in, I guess we should say who the three players are. being forward, Kristen Hamilton, who will be Amy's direct replacement. Midfielder, Hallie Mace, who's going to be our... She's got good rookie of the three, and then goalkeeper Caitlin Rowland. And again, she was North Carolina's starter, really, till about 2019. And then she kind of fell out of favour because Casey Murphy's coming. Thinks, you know, she came from overseas and is kind of taking the reins in North Carolina. When you look at Casey Murphy or Caitlin Rowland, and Kristen Hamilton, next two players with plenty of experience in winning NWSL championships too. They've been in the league for a while, they know what they're doing. So, yeah, you're losing experience in Amy Rodriguez, but you're bringing in experience, winning experience from elsewhere. So it's not the worst trade in the world.
And Amy just has to change locker rooms on Friday night. She will not be in the KC locker room, but in the North Carolina one. So, okay, let's switch to the Wednesday night game at Children's Mercy Park, a 1-1 draw with Sporting with the San Jose Earthquakes. On paper, it looks like a bad result. San Jose hadn't won a game since May 7th, but they were coming in off of a couple of draws. It's a team that's 3-7-3, Sporting fighting in second place in the West, looking to overtake Seattle on top of the division. But this was a really interesting game. Let's first of all, hey Breyer, who all wasn't there for Sporting last night that they that would normally be there?
Quite a lot there. Obviously, there were the ones. First, I guess it's a two-part question because you have both the players who were gone, which I'll get to that in a second, but also Peter Vermees for the first time in an MLS game since 2009 when Kurt Adolfo was the prior head coach. He was not on the touchline, and the reason for that is because he was in MLS safety protocols, which that was announced prior to the game. And coming in was his longtime assistant and Sporting name on the wall of honor, Kerry Zavagnin, who he came in. Nothing much changed tactically. Peter mentioned through Zoom in the post-match press conference that the subs were predetermined. And so it was kind of like Peter was there anyway. It was just Kerry was the person actually there. As for players, as we know already, Gianluca Busio and Alan Pulido are up at the Gold Cup with the U.S. and Mexico, respectively. And then a few other faces not there for Sporting. Felipe Hernandez, he was out due to personal reasons. Elie was a late scratch, a normal starter at the back. So it was kind of a mishmash of players. I know that Wilson Harris got his first MLS start. Cam Duke got his first MLS start of the season, played very well. So yeah, lots of rotations here for this midseason game, and it turned out to be an interesting one as the game went along too.
All right, so let me I want to throw Sean the softball here, but let me set it up. It's scoreless at halftime. A couple of good chances for Sporting, but it's scoreless at halftime. San Jose caught up to the game in the second half, took a lead, and and was looking, like I said, for its first victory in more than 2 months. And as time is winding down, we're in about the 85th minute or 86th minute. It's still 1-0 San Jose, and there is there's a play in the box, in the San Jose box. Johnny Russell has the ball on his foot, moving toward the goal. He goes down.
No, he even goes down.
There's contact. Yeah. I think there's contact made. He goes and he's up right away. He bounces back up. He doesn't roll. He wants to continue the play.
Yeah.
But play is stopped and a penalty is called. So it looks like Sporting's going to have the opportunity to tie the game with a penalty kick here. They go, the official goes to the review, and it is determined that Johnny Russell was not fouled here. And okay. Now how is it going to be resolved? Because Johnny Russell didn't stop play. The ball was still in play.
Mm-hmm.
But it was resolved that the San Jose Earthquakes goalkeeper had the ball in his hand, and it's San Jose's ball. So listen, we'll talk about the game tying goal in a minute. But Sean, you dug into this pretty deeply last night. A lot of controversy here, and even though Peter Vermees was not on the sideline, he made his feelings known about that call.
You know, Peter made his feelings known, and Briar actually wrote the in-depth piece on all of that. So feel free to go read his piece. But I completely agree with Peter, and I'm going to have my own little rant here. I'm not allowed to swear on this podcast, am I, Blair? No, I won't. I'll say it was BS. I will say that. I don't get it. It's, as you were saying, you know, Johnny Russell, he's running down the right. He's got the ball at his feet. He goes past his defender. There is a very clear, you know, the defender catches his back foot. So for 95% of players, they'll go down. And it was a good point where it wasn't like a little touch that you see nowadays and you see players flying about. There was a very clear kick on his back ankle. He could have went down and wins the penalty. It happens anyway. He stays up. The referee gives a penalty. And you're like, oh, that's great. You know, he saw the foul. Johnny was getting close to goal, but he had a couple of players to go through. And then, yeah, he goes to VAR and takes it away. And at that point, the problem to it is, you know, this league, across the world, you know, we're trying to get rid of diving and going down easy. And now you're literally punishing a player for not going down. It makes zero sense. Should players get fouls in the box and clearly, you know, get held up or whatever and stay up and, you know, get nothing out of it? Or should they go down and get a penalty? And then everyone complains that, oh, we dove, like you shouldn't have went down. And, well, you know, I get it's not the fans' fault. And this was Joseph Dickerson, the referee. He has an awful game all night. I mean, I don't know what game he was watching. And MLS can't find me for saying that. So, awful game. They'll probably find Peter. Can't confirm. But no, it's terrible. And, you know, like you said, then this all goes down. Johnny stays up. You know, he was still trying to play. The play is blowing dead. And then the referee gives the ball back to San Jose's keeper. I can say that Daniel Sperry is he's the pool reporter, and he asked a follow-up about why the ball was given, or why the penalty was basically taken back and why the ball was given back. Because at first, the pool report the answer was, the referee saw that the call was incorrect. So it was like, okay, no kidding. But the referee says the defender got the ball first and then hit Johnny Russell, which I didn't see. And even then, he's still been clearly, you know, the defender didn't win the ball. Russell still got it. So that's an issue right there. And then secondly, this is what Briar jumped into and looked into. Mistakes in the, you know, the laws of the game. If a VAR result is overturned, they'll do a drop ball, which, you know, it's two players, referee drops the ball, two players kick it, and we go. But because it's in the penalty box, they just give it to San Jose's goalkeeper. So it was a correct call in the rules of the game. That doesn't mean the rule is stupid. So awful call, stupid decision. The referee is literally blue dead in active play. And then he says, here you go, San Jose, here's the ball. And we'll move on to the goal now. But luckily, you know, luckily for Sports and KC, they do at least get the equalizing goal. Thing.
Take it away, yeah. Briar.
Yeah, like Sean said, I went a little deeper into the play and Peter's very, very impassioned speech about the officiating that night. I don't know if I've ever seen a man more angry on a Zoom call than Peter was during that exchange. But yeah, like I was thinking, so particularly about the rule where it is law eight, it's law 8.2 in the official rules of the game, which if you want to be like a FIFA recognized competition, you have to abide by those rules. So MLS is, that's the rules they abide by. And Sean basically said, like he said, it's just like, it doesn't matter who has possession when it becomes a drop ball. If it's in the penalty area, it's going to be given back to the defending team's goalkeeper. And as I was driving home last night, I was thinking of like what would be kind of the sport, the other sports equivalent of that. And I was thinking, like, imagine if the Chiefs are driving down, they're in the red zone, it's first and 10 at the 15, they're trying to score. And there's a fumble on the play, ton of bodies, both teams get hands on it. And we'll say that the opponent gets hands on the football last and it goes out of bounds. Now, under normal football rule, like the football rules we know, American football, like the Chiefs get the ball back and just be lost down. Imagine if, like in this case, it were because, and imagine if it were in this case, it would just be given to the opponent
because it touched the ball last.
Yes, yes. Imagine like that. Like that's kind of the. I mean, that's the closest comparison I can think of for this, and like. Like I said, just like Sean said, just because the rule is in the rule book doesn't mean it's not flawed. And it did, between that and then the penalty kick that wasn't, ended up not being called by Joseph Dickerson, it cost Sporting a pretty strong attacking opportunity. Granted, they did eventually get the tying goal, but if they score in the 87th minute, or 87th, 88th minute, whatever it was, and then have some momentum and a little extra time. Who knows? Maybe Sporting comes back and scores a winner in stoppage time. They've done that a couple of times this season in the past. So I don't know. It's a big what if scenario, but it's also a scenario that really shouldn't have happened.
Complete cluster is the quote from Peter Vermees. Disrespectful, can't understand it. You're right, came very strong in his reaction to that moment.
There was some kind of cluster, I'll tell you that much.
But all's well that ends well, if you call a draw well. It ended up, you know, Johnny Russell ended up with a heck of a set play kick that led to Sporting's tying goal in extra time. I believe it was an extra, it had to be, right? Because it took 5 minutes to untangle the penalty, no penalty play. And, Sean, take us through Johnny Russell. And of course, Mr. Goal Scorer himself, Daniel Shalloway.
Goal Scorer himself. Yeah. It was the third minute of stoppage time. So 93rd minute. So, you could tell after that penalty was taken away, you know, this Sporting KC team this year, they make it a hell of a stressful job for us beat reporters, I'll tell you that much. But, you know, it reminds me of, you know, it's me, I'm going to talk about Liverpool. It reminds me of back in 2019, even if Liverpool go down, I always sack it. Like, we always score a goal, we always come back. That's almost the same with this Sporting KC team. Even if they're down, you have the sense that this team is going to score a goal. I mean, they were shut out once last season. I don't have it off the top of my head. I can't think of a time he was shut out this season. Yeah, it might have happened once. But good team that scores goals. Good, it's a team that comes back. So yeah, once that penalties decision was taken away, Children's Mercy Park was a little riled up. The players obviously were. And they were mad after just the referee's decisions all game. I mean, Daniel Shallow, he says it was shocking as well. So, you know, the surging forwards, Judson for, why am I forgetting the team? For Salt Lake, takes down Russell and gets sent off. Russell's free kick from 25 yards out, pings off the crossbar, pings off the post, off the back of Marcinkowski's back, the goalkeeper. And literally every player just stuck there, stock still, except pre-sports and KC players.
Right.
It would have been Shelton, Shallowy, and oh, who was the third? Can you remember, Briar, who the third player was to run to that ball?
Oh, Jesus. No, not off the top of my head, no.
Yeah.
Also, for the record, just looked it up, and Sporting was shut out once this year by Houston. But yeah, like you said, it's a rare occurrence.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, because the team got scored. So yeah, Shallowy gets the ball first. He pokes it home from a yard out. Daniel says after the game, you know, he's going to race that ball first. He's in a race for the golden boot, so he wants those goals. So he has 8 on the season now. That moves him into third place. And the top two was Chicharito and I believe it's Rui Diaz for Seattle. Both have 10. So he's 2 behind the lead in third place.
And almost had the game winner later in stoppage time.
Had a pass to, I know.
Yeah, had a nice attempt. Okay, hey guys, let's take a break. And we've got some national soccer team news to discuss when we return.
Hey, it's Blair. We have a special subscription offer for SportsBeat KC listeners, unlimited digital access to the Kansas City Stars award-winning sports coverage. Sign up now for 1 year of Sports Pass for access to all the sports news, features, and columns presented on the KansasCity.com site, and it's only $30. That's a 40% savings off our regular rate. Your subscription will automatically renew after the initial term at $50 unless you tell us to cancel. Your subscription helps support the sports coverage of KansasCity.com and the Kansas City Star, and that support has never been more important. Please visit KansasCity.com/SportsBeatKCOffer to get this special offer. And as always, thanks for listening.
We're back with Sean Goodwin and Briar Napier talking soccer and kind of a split decision when discussing national team outcomes this week. The men's team picked up the 1-0 victory over Canada in Gold Cup play on Sunday. Great atmosphere at Children's Mercy Park for that. The national team now plays in the Gold Cup quarterfinal Sunday against Jamaica, 8:30. We've got games in Dallas, I want to say, at AT&T Stadium. But how about, hey, Briar, just a quick thought on you were out there. Both of you guys were there. But quick thought on the U.S. men's national team winning on last Sunday in Kansas City.
But yeah, like you said, awesome environment. It was about just over 18,000 showing up at Children's Mercy Park. And then I saw that Kansas City was also the highest rated TV market for the game. So that'll certainly help for any sort of motivation for KC's World Cup bid and show that. But anyway, in terms of the games itself, so Shaq Moore scored the fastest goal in U.S. men's national team history about 20 seconds in. And from then on, until about the 25, 30 minute mark, it was all U.S. And it looked like something just like, right, we scored early. We're going to try to put Canada away early and we're going to get 3 points in dominating fashion. And then Canada grew into the game. And for the last hour or so, it was Canada's game. And the U.S. very much kind of looked like they were playing not to lose rather than to just blow Canada out of the water. However, Canada never really put up any frightening chances. There were a couple of slight ones. I know Tajon Buchanan had a curling shot that just narrowly missed the post. That it was maybe a little earlier in the game, and there weren't as tired legs. It could have had that extra curl to go in. But other than that, Canada really didn't have many scoring opportunities and really threatening chances. And so because of that, the U.S., despite kind of underwhelming second half, that Shaq Moore goal in the first minute was enough to get them 3 points and really make it just a good week in all in Kansas City. Three wins, 9 points, win the group. And when you're doing it with a team that's heavily rotated and you don't have a lot of heavy hitters in on the U.S. team, that's not an achievement to put on the back burner. I mean, it's still impressive to do. So it's just a matter now whether how far they can take it in the Gold Cup and whether they can make a good run out of it.
Sean, I was a little disappointed. I was really happy to see Jean-Luc Agüero start the game. A little disappointed to see him come out in the second half. What was said about the substitution of removing Agüero?
I mean, there's not too much to it, to be honest. It's just Greg Berhalter looking to tie things up, or tighten things up, I should say, really. You know, fresh legs in the midfield. Jackson York was his direct replacement. And if you're following me on Twitter, you know my opinions on Jackson York. Not quite the same quality, but I mean, even just watching his Yule's 25-30 minutes, you can tell he's out of his depth. I'm sorry. But it's fresh legs on the field when the US, they were in a tough, tight game. You know, they're playing a third game in a week. It was a hot day in Kansas City. And they scored such an early goal. You know, Greg Berhalter kind of dunked on me a little bit when I asked about the early goal, and he referenced England's early goal and how that changes the game. And
got your final.
Yeah, I was like,
that was a direct Greg, shot.
I know. But yeah, I mean, he's not lying in that, you know, he scores such an early goal. Instead of, you know, if the US was on the front foot for 60, 70 minutes, the better team chasing a goal, that's different from scoring so early, and now Canada's like, oh crap, we have to score. So, you know, the US kind of had the best of the game for 30 minutes, and then Canada just took over. The US was chasing the ball, they were back and forth, they couldn't really get a hold of it, the passing was a little bit sloppy. So legs do get tired, and replacements have to be made, and when you're a defensive midfielder in that game like Buzio was, you'll want his players being young raggers, as young as he is. So, yeah, the substitute made sense. But the fans weren't too happy. And obviously, as transfer rumours swirl, I can't say it will happen in the next couple of days. Maybe when this pod is released, you know, it might be a done deal for Buzio.
Well, I was gonna ask you percentage chance that he played his last game at Children's Mercy.
Yeah, okay.
It sounds like
we're
in triple digits on percentage chance.
You
home fans won't get to see him again in Kansas City, not in a sports
certainly.
Uniform.
Yeah, certainly. You know, for the US, I'm sure he will again. This seems to be a favorite place for US to play.
Yep.
But again, details and, you know, what exactly the trade entails, yet to be confirmed. You know, obviously there's Fabrizio Romano out in Europe, and you've got Taylor Twellman here tweeting out stuff with their contacts. All I can say is, because, you know, I'm looking for proper confirmation, is it's right now it's in a hold and passing the trade, but it'll probably be happening in the next couple of days.
Okay. All right. Let's close on the U.S. women's national team. They're 3-0 loss to Sweden in the Olympic opener. It was an alarming score and an embarrassing loss, Megan Rapinoe said. And very uncharacteristic of the U.S. women. Of course, we're interested not only because this team represents the United States, it's the best in the world, but it's also coached by Vladko Andonovski, the Kansas Cityan. So his first loss as the U.S. coach, the first loss for the U.S. in 44 matches. So listen, it's pretty difficult not to advance in Olympic play. There's 12 teams in the tournament. 8 of them make the quarterfinals. I don't think there's any possibility of the U.S. not advancing into the quarterfinals. And hopefully they go into their next game, which is against New Zealand, with a chip on their shoulder. But 3-0 loss for this team. This is this was an eye-opener, wasn't it, Sean?
It was. And Sweden just seems to be their Achilles heel. I mean,
yep.
Again, we talk about a 44-game undefeated streak. I think the only time we didn't win, or at least the only time Vlatko hasn't won, it was against Sweden. So whether they just have Vlatko's number, but I mean, Sweden has always obviously been kind of a soccer powerhouse. I guess women's and men's, both sides are good. But you know, it's an early setback, but this is the US we're talking about, and you know, we've got New Zealand next and Australia down the pipe. Both good teams. But like you said, 8 teams advanced. There's no real cause for concern right now. So yeah. If they come up against Sweden later in the tournaments, then can we start asking questions again? In 3-0, yeah, I believe the first time they've been shut out since 2017.
Yep.
One of their worst losses in several years, like you said, black loss. So it's not the best way to start a tournament. And you can argue that they flew all the way to Japan and the heat and so on. So it's like Sweden, it's not as far as a flight, but still a damn long flight. So I threw excuses out like a window. The US didn't play well. Sweden is what it is. You move on. Losses happen. You can't go undefeated. You just put it behind you and you keep going for gold.
Absolutely. All right. We've got so much to talk about on this podcast when it comes to soccer. And so we'll be back next week talking Sporting Kansas City, Kansas City NWSL, the U.S. men's and women's national teams in their competitions. Sean Goodwin, Brian Napier, great catching up with you, and we'll do it again next week. That'll do it for today. Thanks to our SportsBeat KC production staff of Derek Donovan, Beth Welch, Monty Davis, Jeff Rosen, Chris Fickett, and Savannah Smith. Tip of the cap to Sean Goodwin and Brian Napier for stopping by and talking soccer. Links to their stories can be found in the show notes and on kansascity.com. Hey, we got another deal for you. You can subscribe to Sports Pass for 99 cents a month. That's right, 99 pennies a month. Sports Pass is the online version of the Star Sports section. You get all the stories that appear in the print editions of the Star, plus additional stories that appear only on the website, and of course, they appear first on kansascity.com. After 3 months, it auto-renews at $5.99 a month, unless you cancel. How do you get it? Go to kansascity.com/sportspass2020. That is kansascity.com/sportspass2020. Do you want more than just sports coverage? Check out the entire Kansas City Star product. Sports news, features, commentary, and analysis, the whole thing. You get all the stories written by my talented colleagues, plus additional national news, sports, and business coverage with the e-edition. The details for all of these deals can be found at account.kansascity.com/subscribe. And if you're having trouble hunting down any of those offers, send me an email, bkirkhoff@kcstar.com, and I will get you to the right place. So whether it's the Sports Pass or the full subscription, you're getting and supporting the best sports and news coverage in Kansas City and helping us produce programs like SportsBeat KC. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Friday with another episode.